Zoom is taking a while to process these recordings. So, hi, and welcome to The Art of Teaching ATM Online. Wow, we have 100 people here. So that means you all got in before the door closed. Anybody who tries to sign up afterwards won't be able to join us. But I will share the recording, either from today or yesterday, we'll see. Before we started, I played a song by Greg Holden called Save Yourself. It's somebody I really like. And I love this song in relationship to our work, because I think it talks about being congruent and about learning from our personal practice and bringing what we learn on our own to our students. You know, the method is about coordinated action, about acting effectively in the world. And it's also about resilience, right? Moshe had two definitions of health. One was living your unavowed dreams, and the other was the ability to recover from accident, injury, illness, trauma, the ability to bounce back. And I think that's one of the things that we have to offer ourselves and our students. And I think it's more important now, perhaps, than at any other time for ourselves and for our students. So I want to start there because I think, you know, as I say to people at the end of a training program, and some of you know that because you've heard me say it to you, you know, when you're done, it doesn't matter whether you teach the method in your home or at a physical therapy clinic, if you teach it in a barn or in a studio, on a factory floor or in a park. It doesn't matter if you teach classes or you give FIs. It matters to me that you practice the method. And I think it's more important to practice the method and not teach it than it would be to teach it and not practice it. So I think that our work comes out of our personal practice, and it's through our practice and our struggles, you know, the dead ends and when you go off the path and you find your way again, and the roadblocks that we have with having our own practice and the delights and the discoveries, it's from that experience that we can meet other people with where they are. You know, this morning I did the AY a day ATM. I did it yesterday. I don't do it every day of the week, but for me, that's a part of my practice, meeting with other colleagues and working on ourselves together and sharing that. So I wanted to start today by talking about that. You know, there's something about being congruent, about being able to say to somebody, you know, when they're struggling, that you understand their struggle because you've gone through it, to be able to recognize that. And also to be able to recognize when somebody has a different challenge than us, and to be curious about that. So anyways, the aim today, my aim, is to introduce you to some ideas about what it means to teach online. Last weekend, I taught a couple of webinars that it's on my website as well. There's a blog post called Being There. And in that time and in that blog post, I talk about the technical and administrative aspects of doing a meeting online, really how to use Zoom. And I'll publish a blog about this, and I'll give you some other resources that I found in that as well. The aim today is, we will talk a little bit about technology because we are using technology, but it's really to talk about, what does it mean to teach this way, to meet with people through this medium. Now, I have had some amazing conversations with friends and with colleagues and emails and Facebook messages and blah, 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 back and forth, especially this week, about teaching online. And let me say, if you don't like doing this, you are not the only person. Lots of people have said, I hate this. My aim today is not to convince you that you shouldn't hate it. You know, it's like an ATM lesson. You can like it or not. You can dislike whatever lessons you like. And whether you like it or not, I mean, it might not be for you, and that's a possibility. But what I like to propose are some distinctions about how we can teach in this way, and to talk about what is special about this medium and the opportunities it provides. So let's go back to the founder, to thinking about Moshe. So Moshe, one of his dreams, which he didn't get to realize, was to teach ATM around the world using Telestar, using satellite television. Last week I talked to Allison Rapp, and she was telling me about this. She was actually one of the people trying to make this happen, and it turned out it was so expensive, they couldn't figure out how to make it happen or find someone to sponsor it. I mean, here we are, you know, this meeting cost like $20 a month to hold. You know, how can you rent a place for so little, right? I mean, you can use a free account on Zoom as well, but I mean, it's so inexpensive. We have come a long way. At the same time that Moshe was talking about teaching through satellite television, another of the great geniuses of the last century, Buckminster Fuller, the mathematician, the guy who invented the geodesic dome, he was talking about cable television. And what was interesting is he was talking about cable television for two things. Education, because cable television, you could broadcast, but because you have the buttons on the remote control, people could respond. So you could have a multiple choice question and people could use the buttons on the remote control to respond to questions, to give feedback. It was the possibility, not just of broadcasting an ATM, but of having two-way conversation. The other thing that Bucky thought about and wrote and spoke about, which is really relevant, especially to those of us in the United States, is that you could have an election over cable television. Right? Now, I will point out in 2018, the year after the Spanish flu, the worldwide epidemic, the United States did have an election. It wasn't a presidential election, it was a congressional election, but we managed to have one in the middle of what was, up until then, the worst pandemic in the world. So I think we still have a chance. Anyway, enough about politics. What I want to present first is this idea that there's two ways to think about this medium. One is to think about it as a broadcast, and the other is to think about it as an interaction. You know, there are three kinds of ways we can interact. One is a broadcast. The second is, you know, sending letters or SMSs, text messages or emails, where you have a conversation going back and forth, but it's not in real time. And then we have this, you know, and a phone call as well, or, you know, however you talk to people without looking at them. But we have these means where we can be together at the same time. right? Sometimes people make the distinction between being teaching an in-person class and teaching a live class. I beg to differ. This is live. We're just in different places. But lives means that we can interact with each other at the moment. If I say something, you don't understand it, you want me to repeat it, you can go to your rectangle where you see your picture and click on the word unmute, and you can unmute yourself and speak up. You can raise your hand. I notice in the newest version of Zoom, if you don't have the new version, go to the website and find out how to upgrade it, find out how to find out what your version is. There are reactions here, so you can put thumbs up and thumbs down. I have no idea how it works. It just appeared yesterday. I haven't tested it. I mean, there you go. Thank you, Jackie. She put her thumbs up. There you go. So that's a way to respond in the moment. I mean, right now there are 4 pages of people, so I can't see all your reactions without leafing through all the pages. I want to thank everybody who has their camera on. I should tell you, I'm going to share the video. So if you don't want to be seen, you could shut your camera off. I will say that when I share the video, here you can see your names. If you want to add to your name or put it in the chat where you're from, you know, here it says Larry G, Santa Cruz, California, so you know where I am. It's kind of cool to know where people are from. Yesterday, we had the first Feldenkrais teacher from India join us. That was really cool. So really, people from all over the world, I'm glad to see you. Anyways, back to the distinctions. So here we have the possibility to have a live, interactive session with people, not just to, you know, broadcast like a TV show or a radio program or a podcast, but to have some back and forth. Back and forth is really different than what happens in a live class. What happens here is a few people that I've talked to have said that teaching a class is like a dance. And it is, right? We have this non-verbal coordination. Norma asked me if I'm recording, and yes, I remembered to record, and I'm thankful that you've reminded me, because sometimes I forget. And look, this is a good example of how when you teach a class, you're not in it alone. You got to see the people in your class as your co-conspirators, right? We're breathing together. We're working on this together. So, you know, I appreciate the clue. What we cut when we teach here is we cut the fabric of this nonverbal somatic conversation that we're having with the other people in the class. You know, when I'm teaching an ATM class, I can look over the class and kind of get a sense of the whole, right? When you're teaching a class, I mean, I don't know about you, but excuse me for a moment. Just wetting my whistle. When I'm teaching a class, it's like, I know this is a loaded metaphor, but the teacher is a shepherd, right? What you do is you have to lead the class. You take them somewhere. And then I think we're all tuned into the people who don't fit in. So, you know, if the class is going at one rhythm and somebody is doing something else, you see them. If somebody is doing something different and they don't fit in, right? And that gives you a cue. And then we have choices as a teacher. I mean, you can just keep going, right? You can bring that person into the fold, or you can bring the flock to where that person is. It's harder to do that here. There's a few things we can do to make it easier. So today, I'm warning you, I'm going to move my camera. So if you get seasick, close your eyes for a moment. But I'm using an external camera because I want to show you my setup. There, let's see. There you can see my laptop. And then above it, I have a big screen. And that's where I'm looking at you. That screen is three times the size of my laptop. Hi, Isabel. And that gives me a much easier way to get an appreciation of the people that I'm looking at. I'm not saying you have to do it, but it makes a really big difference. I use the big screen when I'm working because it's easier for my eyes. I have the second screen, and sometimes I'm playing music there. I use that to do research. Like if I'm typing an email, I have another window open down there. Sometimes I'm watching Netflix down there. Don't tell anybody. Oh, by the way, in Netflix, if you haven't seen Babies yet, there's one about crawling on there that's really great. It is delightful. Anyway, back to the matter at hand. So, you know, one thing is that
it's a question about
yes, please, Christina.
Just before you move on, just are you standing up as well, Larry?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm good catch, Christina. I'm standing up. One of the best things I ever got in my life was a sit-stand desk. So I have a high-low desk. It goes up and down. And I have a movable chair as well. So when I'm sitting on a dynamic surface. But I think a lot of people who talk about presenting online suggest that you stand up. I don't always teach standing up, but when I'm sitting down, I do teach on a chair that moves around. It's a Core QOR360.com chair. I'll put the reference in there. They're totally cool. But I think that makes for a more dynamic lesson. Sometimes, especially in conversations, I teach sitting down. All right. So, you know, what happens is what we lose is this connection, the nonverbal connection, right? I mean, I don't know about you, but when I'm teaching a class, I am tuned into the music that the students make, which is their grunts and their sighs and their breathing, you know? And especially if I notice when there's somebody is expressing something that way, or you know, sometimes somebody could be crying or shaking, and you see that, you know, you lose that music, right? And you lose the ability to scan. So I want to talk about what you get, right? I mean, well, first of all, before I do that, this is not a prescription. I am not telling you how you should do anything. What I want to present are some possibilities. This is about addition and not subtraction. And it is absolutely possible to teach a lesson in mostly broadcast mode. For instance, yesterday on the AY Day Group, Chris Kresge from DC taught an ATM lesson. There were 111 people on that. Quan increased the enrollments because more people are showing up. And you can't watch 111 people. You know, Chris, this is a shout out. She did a superb job teaching that lesson. She read it beautifully. There were a few moments where she added a few things of her own emphasis. She was watching the class, but mostly she read the lesson. And in her way of reading, gave certainly, I would say us, but I can say me, gave me the feeling that I was included, right? Because at some point she said, and now we'll try this and change the quality. Beautiful. And then she moved on. And that acknowledgement, you know, that spoke to me. I think, well, I don't know. maybe this is true for you too. I think what makes a lesson a really good lesson is that you feel like the teacher is teaching you, that they're speaking directly to you, that it's your lesson. So what I want to talk about is, how do you teach online? You cannot. And I let me say it a different way. I think the most common mistake that we make when we try to take a live class online, and it doesn't matter whether it's an ATM class or a piano lesson or a math lesson, the first thing we try to do is we think, how can we make what we did in an in-person class happen here? And you can't. Right? It's a different medium. So what, and it's not just a different medium for us as the teachers. It's a different medium for the students, right? Because look, one thing I learned in the first training that I organized, we had a blind student in that training. And one of the first things I learned is that everyone else in the training cheats. Right? Because we say, don't look around. Well, we all look around. Okay, don't look around obsessively. Don't compare yourself. Don't copy. Yeah, but we all look around. When you're lying on the floor, when I'm lying on the floor during an AY class, I can see the screen. I know where it is, but I can't see the little squares. Now, it is possible for you as a student, I'm going to show you with my video. You can do this. You can click on anybody's rectangle and click on pin the video. And when you do that, that will make their video front and center. When you're the convener of the meeting, the organizer, you can spotlight, that's what they call this, any video. So I can put my video front and center for everybody. And then let me stop that. I can cancel the spotlight. And then if you look in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see that you have a little thing that says speaker view and gallery view. And if you click on that, you also get to choose whether you see the person speaking big, or you get to see all the Hollywood squares or the Brady Bunch squares that, so you get some control. So the student can have some control. Yesterday, one of the participants who's hard of hearing and who I've known for years, and we've been talking about how do you make ATM accessible to the students. And you know, one thing I said to him was, the student can make the teacher big so you could lip read. There are also apps on the phone that do simultaneous transcription. There's a free one. It's in the App Store and the iPhone Store. I think it's called Easy Transcribe. It was created by the students at Gallaudet. It does simultaneous transcription. But a student could do that. A student could also look at the whole class. You can have more than one login to a class. I didn't think about this yesterday, but you know, you could log into the class through one account and watch the whole class. And then if you were hard of hearing, you could also log in and just zoom in on the teacher on a different screen so you could lip read them. So there are ways that this technology can make lessons more accessible for people. But let's get back to what we can do. So one of the things that's missing, right, is this dimension of breath. For us to be able to listen to it. And so I was talking to to my friend Becky in Seattle, Father in Christ colleague, Becky Parsons, about this situation. And and we're also talking about some of the other challenges of teaching online. Like one of the questions people have asked, and I've talked to several people about this, is the camera angle, right? Because people can have their camera like you never know, you know, what they're looking at. Suzanne, you want to say something?
I was shielding my eyes because she switched the camera.
I thought you were
raising
your hand. Yeah. Nice to see you. So the question is, how do you get that? How do you get people to tune in? So here's a suggestion. And we will, let me adjust it a little bit. Yeah, we're going to play with this possibility a little later in the meeting. But one of the great things about Zoom, and I don't know if it's still this way, but one of the ways they got you to sign up for a paid account was that you can do breakout groups. So you can take a group and break it into smaller groups. So just like in a class, you would have people meet together in small groups, you can have people meet simultaneously in small groups, the teacher, the convener of the meeting can. And the cool thing is you have the magic power of going and visiting the individual groups. So here's what I suggested as a strategy. Yeah, this is taking advantage of the technology. And it's also something else. It's about, if we've lost the nonverbal dance, then it's about how we can imagine the relationship that we have with our students and the kinds of interactions that we have. Moshe defined ATM as an environment for learning. So this is an environment for learning. He's teaching ATM here. And I think part of our job is not just thinking about being the custodian and the convener and the facilitator of learning, not being the only person in that role, but realizing that we can help our students develop their own ability to learn, their self-reliance, right? To be their own authority by giving them ways where they can be the teachers for each other. That we can construct environments where the students can learn from and with each other. Now, this is called cooperative learning in the pedagogical theories of the world. It was developed originally by two brothers who were school teachers in the late 1960s and 70s in the United States. I'm sure it was invented in other places too. But the idea is to think about ways that students can interact with each other. Now, personally, the practice of this was difficult for me for two reasons. One, I like to know what's going on. So, you know, I love group conversations, you know, big conversations in a training program. I'll tell you, from the evaluations that I have done in training programs for decades, most people don't like them. You know, I mean, you want to hear what you have to say and two or three people, and afterwards, most people, it's just not that interesting, I think. So, I mean, I love those because I get to find out what's going on. When people are in small groups, I feel left out. I don't know what's going on, and I want to know. And honestly, it was also hard for me because I felt like I was cheating. Because I thought my job was to be in front of the class and teaching, right? And sometimes I think getting out of the way and creating a place where people can learn, that's what's most important. So here's a way to do that. At the beginning of a lesson, right? Like at the very beginning, maybe, that you would do something like, say, a test movement where, let's just take a classic ATM lesson where people are lying on their back, they interlace their fingers, they put their hands behind their head, and they lift their head, right? And you ask them to go, you know, figure out where their arms are, where their elbows are, to go slowly, blah, 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 to explore that. And then maybe the first step in that lesson might be to have people repeat that movement and breathe. Do it while they breathe out, do it while they breathe in, while they hold their breath. I think this is the great opportunity for a breakout group. First of all, it gives the students a chance to meet each other, And it's a good thing to do two by two, and it creates an environment where conversation becomes possible because they don't have to do that in front of the class. It's a safe invitation. And I think at this time, talking to each other, you know, we are socially distancing, but we should be socially isolating. I think we need the contact and the connection. So this is one way to offer that. And then what I would suggest you do is have the students each lie on the floor and put their camera, which could be their phone or their laptop or whatever, angle it so they can see each other and they can talk to each other. That takes care of the problem of how do you get people to set up their cameras? Because they get to help each other do it. And then, so you have to give them a little while, which means you'll have a chance to visit the groups and interact with them. Check in.
Larry?
Yeah.
When you say have the students set up their cameras so that they can be lying on the floor and they can see themselves and see other people, are you talking about that in the big group or in the breakout group?
In the breakout group, not breakup group, breakout group. Yeah, to have them do that so they you know, whether they're it's sitting on a chair or a counter or on the floor to play with it. And look, to participate in the meeting, it's really low tech requirement. You can do that with a tablet, a smartphone. Some people, if you're tech savvy, you could have the thing, and you have an HDMI cable, you could show it on your TV. So you could, you know, especially if somebody is visually impaired, that's a really useful thing to do. I don't do that, but you could help people do that. And you don't have to tell people how to do that. You can find the information on the Zoom website and give your students the link. And when you're renting this connection from Zoom, you're paying them to provide the support. So like if students have questions, if something is not right, if they're trying to get into the meeting and they're sending you an email while you're teaching, you can't help them. So it's really good to tell people, please contact Zoom, they'll help you. They're a bit overwhelmed at the moment, but they have ramped up to meet the situation. They just upgraded the software yesterday or the day before. So they're rising to the occasion. Things take longer and a little slower, but they're there. So just remember, you don't have to provide support. Anyway, so you get them to introduce themselves to each other. You ask them to adjust their camera. And then the assignment is to watch the person do this movement and to listen to them as they exhale and hum. You know, whatever. And then what you do, this is what I suggest. The person who moved says what they noticed. So don't start with the observer. Start with the mover. Right? Because the job is to help people listen to themselves. So you start by the person who is observing, just witnessing the person, reporting what they noticed. And then the person who is observing says what they noticed. Like, oh, you know, let's say the person who does it says, well, what I noticed that there is a place where I could hear that the hum was uneven. Right? And then the person who's watching might say, you know, what was interesting is I heard that. And then I started to look for what you were doing. Right. And then they can watch each other. And then they can come back. You can also have them hold their breath and watch each other and see what happens. Right. But here you've also gotten people to calibrate to each other, to have a witness. And to do something you would do as the teacher. So in a way, we're distributing the function of the teacher and inviting the other students in class to participate. You could say, if you want, maybe, that what we're doing is, what this situation offers is the ability to see yourself perhaps less as the teacher in front of the class delivering a lesson, and more maybe as a coach, as someone who's interactive and someone who's coaching the students in coaching each other, which I think is really kind of a beautiful thing. But my aim, whenever I teach ATM, my aim, I see your hand, Philippa, let me finish, and I'll get your question. My aim, when people come to class, I aim to convert them, right, into Feldenkrais practitioners. Right. I don't mean teachers. So if you'll pardon me, I'm going to make a distinction. I'm not the word police. I want to express an idea. I'm not saying how you have to speak. I like to make a distinction between practicing the method and teaching the method. Right? We teach the method to students. People who practice the method practice it for themselves. That's what I meant about us practicing the method and not teaching it before. And so my aim is to inspire people to practice the method. And what better way to do that than to help them practice it with each other? Let me give you another suggestion of what we could do. But actually, before I say that, let me say one other thing. Just a practical piece of advice. When you're teaching online, I don't know about you, but when I do the AY a day group, I have my, this has my notes for the or talk, but I have my recipe holder on the floor next to me, and I have the book there so I can follow along with the lesson. Because, you know, don't tell anybody, but sometimes I space out. Or sometimes I'm thinking about something, or I'm still on the last thing and I miss what someone says. And the lesson keeps going. So the most practical piece of advice I can tell you is that it's worth repeating what you say. You don't have to say it in the same way, but to say something more than once is a certain kindness. It also relieves the stress on the student that they have to catch it the first time if they know that you're going to repeat it. And I think encouraging people to ask you if when they lose the thread is a good thing. And if they ask you too often, that's an invitation to a conversation about that. Okay, Philippa, can you unmute? Oh, here, I think I can unmute you. There you go.
Just curious to know what you found is the optimum size for the breakout groups.
The ones I was just talking about were a duet. So okay. People could work with each other. We're gonna do one in a little while and we'll do 3 or 4 people. So you can have a conversation with each other. I like 3 as well because it provides the opportunity, you know, for 3 different roles. So like in a live training, you know, someone can do a movement, someone can accompany them by being a passenger with their hands, and the third person could watch. And then they could have a conversation about the first person experience of doing it, what it felt like, and what it looked like. And, you know, so having a third role makes for a more lively and interesting conversation of perspectives. So it depends on the exercise, all right? In terms of how big the class should be, you know, if you're broadcasting, you can have 100 people. You can have 1,000. You know, one question which somebody asked me, and I don't know the answer to because they asked me on Friday afternoon, and it was too late to find out, is I think we should consult with our insurance policies. Make sure they cover us in this situation and to have a disclaimer to be clear about what you're doing when people sign up for a class. and perhaps even to repeat it at the beginning. I don't know. I'm not a lawyer or an insurance agent or a professional organization, but this is something that we ought to figure out together. All right, let me give you another example. Let's say there's that person in class. Well, you know, people have different kinds of difficulties in class. So there's people who are not doing what you're asking and they know it. It could be curious or frustrated, but they're aware. But then there's those people, you know who I mean, and sometimes it's me or you, who think they're doing it, right? I mean, who may be proceeding with the most beautiful quality of movement in the world in the wrong direction. I mean, you know, you can get there that way, but you're going to have to go all the way around the world. There's a much shorter path. Or, I mean, some people are accidents waiting to happen. And you can see that, right? So the question is, how do you deal with that? And, you know, we have a range of ways of acting, which I would say maybe they go from the most indirect to the direct, right? So the most indirect would be to say the instructions in a different way. Well, first to repeat them, then to say them in a different way. If the person doesn't get it, well, you know, one of the things we lose in the direct, indirect, kind of in the middle, that we lose in this medium is that when I'm teaching a class, you know, and I see that somebody doesn't get it, I can aim my voice in their direction. So they know that I'm talking to them, but the whole class hears it as the class. You lose that ability here, right? So then the question is, how do you interact with somebody in that situation? So one proviso. You know, people come to class because they want to learn. We have, I think, either an explicit or at least we assume that there is an implicit agreement that, you know, that they're there to learn. I think it's important to remember that though you may have a general agreement about that, that is probably a good idea not to assume that somebody wants to learn at the moment you'd like to help them. You know, the former president of the United States loved the phrase, a teachable moment. Should I ever have the honor to meet the man, I would say, I'd like you to think about that. It's a learnable moment. Now, it's not about me teaching, it's about what someone can learn. And I don't want to decide for someone else that they should learn at this moment. What I'm saying is, in a class, let's say this person is doing that and you've tried whatever else and it hasn't worked. I would say, if I'm going to speak directly to them, I would say, hey, Bobby Joe, I wonder if you'd be interested in some help, or I noticed something about what you're doing. Would you like to hear about it? Ask permission. Knock before entering, right? And the greatest thing about that, and be happy when this happens, is when someone says no, right? Because you didn't barge in on them. You didn't step on their toes. You didn't do what, you know, you weren't being the parent of a teenager and doing what was good for them. Who wants to create that situation? And when somebody says no, that makes it safe for other people to say no. Thank them. It also means it's more likely that they're going to ask a question, right? And then you get to interact with the person, to add a constraint, to change something, whatever you might do. The question is, when do you decide to do that? You know, I think if somebody's going in the wrong direction, I mean, in a training, you could wander off for a few days because you're going to come back. You're going to have more chances. But even then, I'm asking, like, how long is it going to benefit somebody to be lost in the wilderness? If I see that it's an accident waiting to happen, I think it behooves me, I think it's my responsibility to do something to prevent that. Right? I don't want to give someone the answer or tell them what to do. I might add a constraint. I'm asking them to do what they're doing and ask them to do something else. Or, I mean, here's a less direct way of doing it. I could ask three different people to demonstrate what they're doing, or two. Let's say two people, right? And so I asked two people to demonstrate. And I said, would you mind demonstrating for the class? And can we talk about what you're doing afterwards? Right? And they might say yes, they might say no. And the thing is, let me stay on track here. So I might ask them. And then we'll watch somebody do it in the way that you're asking for. Right? So let's say the movement is put your hand on top of your head and to tilt your elbow to the side. Right? And so they do that. I'm just doing that because you can see it all. And then you ask the other person to do the same movement, and they do this. Right. So you watch them, and then you ask everyone in the group to do what the second person did. Right? So they're doing that. And so, you know, what's happening? Well, you know, the elbow is coming forward and downward. It's not really going to the side. And the hand's in a different place. So you could ask everybody to put their hand on the back of their head. So you are prescribing the symptom. You're asking everyone to make the mistake. So everyone does that. And then you say, let's watch the other person. Now put your hand on top of your head. Okay, now you've got a good chance that that person might realize their hand was somewhere different. And now, bring your elbow to the side without bringing it forward. And maybe they'll get it. Maybe they won't. If they don't get it, then you could say, hey, Bobby Joe, can we talk for a sec? And then, you know, you could have a conversation with them. What happens in this situation is you make a fishbowl. You bring the person in front. That's facilitator talk. You bring the person in front, and the process that you have with that person individually is for the benefit of the whole class, right? Because making something clear helps everybody. And showing the class that you can coach the person in a kind way, that you can help them ask the questions and find the answers, that you will support them through those moments where they're lost or confused, That's modeling learning for the class, what it's like. So it isn't giving them the answer, but it's giving them kind of a personal ATM at that moment. Right? It's the same thing you would do in an FI, but you're doing it at a distance. So of course, this depends on your comfort, but I think this is a great opportunity that can happen here. Right? I'm not saying you should do this in every class. I'm saying these are ideas of what you could do here. Let me give you one more example. Let me take a drink first. You know, one thing I learned is that there are some people who, like, when you're teaching ATM, I don't know if you heard that on my mic, but some people find that really distracting, particularly doing an ATM. So when I'm teaching an ATM, I usually mute myself. And, you know, when you're teaching on this medium, you know, it's making a video, it's making an audio recording. I'm going to share both of those, but the audio recording, you don't have to record the video. You can set that up. You can just record the audio. You could give people a link to the audio recording on the website. You get a certain amount of storage with that paid account. They're really small recordings. And so you could give your students the recordings of the ATMs for free. You could give them homework to do a specific part of that lesson and come back and talk about it the next week. I'm saying give it away because it doesn't cost you anything, because it's supporting their learning. And you can think about what we're doing online is not just teaching students, but creating a community of learning, a community of learners, that we're participating in it as co-learners. I mean, you are going to mess up, and it's the best thing that could happen, right? I mean, look, when you mess up, there is that moment that I think we all feel. I think it's shame. Oh, shit, I fucked up. Everyone saw that. And then you can, excuse me, and then you get choked up. And then you can breathe. And then you have an opportunity to demonstrate learning. I mean, that's the worst thing that could happen. Excuse me, let me clear. All right. Then, you know, you get a chance to say, oh, look, actually, you know, I messed up those instructions. Or, you know, my response a moment ago, I was a little worried that I was losing you. So I think I was a little sharp. Can I have a do-over? Right? We don't want to model teaching. We want to show people what learning is. And so I think meeting people, not just as the teacher, but meeting them as co-learners, like what I was talking about at the beginning. I mean, that's being authentic. It keeps us from being know-it-alls. Because, you know, when you tell people you're teaching awareness, I don't know if you've realized, but a lot of people hear that as, yo, you're not aware. Or they hear their internal critic. Or, you know, some people hear you going, yeah, 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 I'm more aware than you are. It doesn't matter how nicely you say it. I'm talking about how people hear it. And I think the way to undermine that is to talk about our learning and to meet them as fellow learners as well as teachers. All right, let me give you this other, I gave you the other example. No, the last example. So I don't know about you. You know, some people, you have pets. Some people have a multitude of pets. I mean, maybe birds and snakes, but, you know, dogs and cats. And you have some physical contact there. Some of you are sheltering in place with other people. Some of us are not. A friend of mine wrote to me the other day, and she said, I can't wait to like and hug somebody else. Right? And I think in this moment where we are separate, I mean, some people are living with other people in the same place and keeping each other, you know, keeping separate from each other, which I think must in some ways be the hardest. I think we have to think about touch and the role that touch plays, and in particular, touching ourselves. In the early lessons, and in the lessons that I did when I started working with my mentor, my father and mom, Edna Rosinus. In a lot of lessons, there were moments where the student put their hand on their chest, right? You can think about this, and other people talk about this in terms of heart math and the vagal nerve, but it's about regulating your nervous system. It's about what happens when you touch yourself and you feel yourself. And it's a funny kind of thing, right? Let's do a little sensory math. One eye gives you two dimensions. The other eye gives you two dimensions. Sensory math, two dimensions plus two dimensions gives you three-dimensional vision. I know it's new math. Just, you know, that's how the senses work. So one hand, right here, I can feel, my hand can feel itself, and it can feel what I'm touching. That's two dimensions. So my hand can feel itself. Here, join me. Put your hand on your breastbone. And if you can, line up the knuckles of your fingers with your breastbone. And you want to do this in a way that your hand is soft and that you open the eye of your hand, right? That you keep this part I'm quoting Alan Questel. I got that line from him. That the inner palm of your hand, it's, you're not doing the bell hand, you're not drawing it in, but it's soft. So you feel that one side of your chest with the palm and the other side with your fingers. That hand can feel itself and your chest. Your chest, you can feel yourself from your chest, from your breastbone, from the inside, and tactically, you can feel your hand touching your chest. That's two dimensions. When you add those dimensions together, you get a different sense of yourself. It's not just because it's you feeling yourself from the inside and the outside at the same time. Sorry about that, my alarm. Stop. It's time for a break. See you later. No, something, I can't explain it, but something happens with this multitude of states occurring simultaneously in your nervous system. I think it makes a difference in the balance between the sympathetic and the parasympathetic nervous system. You can say it's a way of grounding yourself. Okay, now leave your hand there. Right, so what you could do in an ATM, put your other hand, the hand behind your head, bring your elbow forward, and now with the hand that's on your chest and your chest, keep your chest from moving, bring your elbow, you know, comfortably forward, and now let your head, let your hand and your arm guide your head to bend forward. But don't let your chest move. Go gently. So the upper part of your thoracic spine and your neck can move a little bit, but nothing below that. And then come back and now let your chest slide down. So pull the bottom of your breastbone to your pubis, pull your belly in, lower your nose and your elbow together, let your chest slide down. And then when you come up, you can breathe out and in, you know, when you come up, let your chest move. So now feel how your chest can move. And look, there you also have a choice. You can move your head, your elbow, your neck as far as is easy, and then move your chest. So it's sequential. And you know, you can hold your breath maybe once every 18 or 19 movements, whether you need it or not. You'll take a quick shallow breath. Just, you know, laughing is breathing. All right, so, and now look, the next time you do that, do it one more time, stay with me. Do it one more time so you lower your head and your chest comes down. Leave your chest there and lift up your head. And do that a few times. How can you do this movement and breathe? Like so your hand is feeling your head and your head is feeling your hand. The other hand is feeling your chest and your chest is feeling your hand. So you feel yourself from the outside and the inside and multiple perspectives at the same time. And you notice you're breathing. Can you breathe and move and feel yourself? So this is, if you'll pardon the pun, and even if you won't, taking things into your own hands, right? And learning that we have some ways of regulating our own nervous system. It's not a switch. It's a matter of how we engage with ourselves and with each other. And so I wanted to show you some ways that this medium, you know, whether you use Zoom or FaceTime or Duo or, I don't know, WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger, whether you're doing this with friends and family or with students or with yourself, you know, there's some ideas in here for your own practice. But I just given you some examples of how you could think about doing this differently. And hopefully some answers to some of the questions that you have been asking. Here's what we're gonna do. it's time to make your own doggy bag. So what are you going to take with you? Right? What did you learn? What idea? But in particular, what action item do you have? What are you going to do? What are you going to experiment with? Just one thing. One thing is enough. For yourself, with each other, how are you going to manifest this? What might get in your way? So I'm going to give you, let's say, 18 minutes to be in a group with let's shoot for three people. That's going to be a hell of a lot of groups. Sure. I have to click, I'm clicking through the number here. So let's see, at 30 groups, 29 groups, we'll be in a group of three or four. So in a moment, you're going to get an invitation to be in a group. It'll pop up on your screen. It's an invitation, not an obligation. You don't have to participate. Once the groups are formed, I'm going to look and make sure no one is left out and no one is alone. So I'm going to move some people around. If you need help, you can ask. And then I'm going to go and visit some of the groups. And those of you who don't want to be in the group, you could also meet here. I'm going to shut the recording off so nothing that happens there will be recorded. So plausible deniability is yours. So here you go. You should see the notice. So introduce yourselves. Tell other people what you're going to do. You can be each other's accountability buddies. Whoa, everybody's going. Hey, Becky. Yolanda, I am going to move you to a group in a moment. Let me find where there's, okay. Wow. You know, every time I throw a party, I'm worried that people are going to show up. And let me tell you, nothing in my childhood prepared me for my current popularity today. Oh, Eleanor, don't worry. You don't have to be in a group. Salut, Iris. Tu veux parler?
Yeah, I wanted to be in a small group. I pressed the button, and then there was nothing anymore. And then I came back.
Well, let me see what happened. I don't know. I might not be able to help you, but maybe the other people here could be a group with you.
Anyway, it's not so... C'est pas tragique.
Ouais. C'est pas tragique. Oui. Et ça va, là?
Oui, ça va bien.
Très bien. Eh bien, on peut barbader un peu en français, n'est-ce pas?
Oui.
So, I'm just doing some housekeeping here. I don't think I have the power to
it's okay.
Add you. But you know, if there's other people here, you could make a group with them.
Okay.
I don't know. Maybe Katerina, you want to join? Arona?
I mean, if it's possible, yes. If not, I wait.
Okay. Oops, I forgot to